Hello, and welcome to Reset and Rewind, the video game movie podcast, where we chronologically discuss every video game movie ever. I'm Doug, and usually I open up with a line or reference to the movie, but I have nothing for this one, I'm sorry. I'm here with Kevin.
Hey.
And Paul.
That was part of the movie, actually.
Yeah, I'm a Kilrathi. I'm a Kilrathi.
Yeah. There were definitely...
with the weird translations, with the weird symbols, and then the English translation would be placed above the weird symbols.
It was a great effect. Worked really well in the 90s, but man, it looks dated right now. It's just so bad.
We watched Wing Commander, 1999, unfortunately.
Apparently it's a video game movie. I never would have known this. If I saw this movie before, I would have just thought it was a shitty space movie.
I saw this movie back in 1999 when I was 10 years old, and I didn't remember anything about it then. I watched it a few days ago, and I still don't remember anything about it.
No, it was a blur. With a few words in it that I wrote down. But other than that, the plot was almost unfollowable.
Well,
just because of how boring it was.
Before we even start on any of that, what the hell is the conflict, right? What's going on? How did this war start? What is the meaning of this war between these cat people and these humans? What's happening?
Are they cats? I thought they were orcs or something.
Oh, I don't know.
They look like boglins.
What is a boglin?
Boglins were these old toys that they were from the late 80s or early 90s. My older brothers had them. But they were these really ugly puppet toys. And I'm pretty sure they used those for the Dothraki, whatever the fuck they're called. Where are they?
Kilrathi,
yeah.
Yeah.
Kielbasi?
Kielbasa.
Doesn't matter what they're called.
Let's talk about the game real quick, since we usually talk about the game. And then let's cut into the movie. Does anyone know about the game?
I've never played it. Actually, when I saw it in theaters, I didn't even know it was based on a game.
So over the weekend, before I watched the movie, I tried to play the game. And it was on Super Nintendo. So I just tried to throw it in, and it wasn't great. The game came out, Wing Commander 1 came out in 1990. For Super Nintendo, it came out in 1992. There are a ton of games that came out, though, Wing Commander-wise, between this game and 1999. We'll go through them real quick. But I don't know. It's a flight simulator. I mean, have you guys played flight simulators before?
Yes.
Yeah. So it plays very similar. Wing Commander was one of the very first flight simulator games, and it spawned, you know, copycats in the forms of X-Wing and TIE Fighter series. So, yeah.
I kind of wish I played the game just to understand what this movie was supposed to be about, just because I was completely lost. And maybe they have cutscenes. So this game had a lot of those cutscenes where they just had people, right? Is that what they had?
Yeah.
Which is always weird. I thought that was a weird 90s trend that they didn't. They actually did that in a lot of sci-fi games. I think they did that in Command & Conquer. And I always thought it just was like... Oh, they did it in Star Wars, too. They did it in... Jedi Knight.
Yeah.
They had the human people in there, human cutscenes. And it was just really, I thought it was kind of off-putting whenever they said that.
Yeah, it's like they're in front of a green screen the entire time. The background is just very early, rudimentary 90s CGI, which I guess for the time doesn't look terrible.
But no, for the time, it probably was impressive. I probably would have been like, whoa, this is cool.
But you can tell they just got Mark Hamill and John Rhys-Davies just to sit in a room and, you know, deliver their dialogue. And, you know,
I mean, that's the other thing here is Wing Commander 1. I don't know if it was Wing Commander 1 or any of the Wing Commander games, they did do movie-like stuff in between the actual action. So to make a movie out of... I mean, this is my comment when I heard that they're making a Metal Gear movie, right? What are you making a movie out of when it's already a flippin' movie? Like, you don't need to make a movie out of a movie. And with Wing Commander, it feels very similar.
It's like this game is an homage to like Star Wars, Star Trek, and probably many other sci-fi books, films, and shows.
Yes.
But it has the distinction that it's a video game. It's not a movie. But my question is, who asked for a Hollywood, you know, feature-length movie out of this franchise?
And also, the other question I have is, who chose the actors for the Hollywood film? Because the actors in the game are arguably better than the actors in the Hollywood film.
Yeah, you have Luke Skywalker and Biff, and they're replaced with Fred and Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, and you got... That's true. And then you got John Rhys Davies, too, who's really good. I like him. He's in... he's Gimli. So it's just shocking. Like, they would go from that type of cast, which is pretty darn good, to just, like, kind of B actors at the time.
I mean,
a bunch of B actors.
Freddie Prinze Jr. was a star during that time. He was a heartthrob and was in a bunch of stuff. Matthew Lillard was very close friends with Freddie Prinze Jr. They were both in She's All That together. And so it made sense that the two of them would, like, come together in a film and do this stuff. Freddie Prinze Jr., since this film, I think has done some pretty good voice work. So is Matthew Lillard. Freddie Prinze Jr. was Kanan Jarrus in Rebels. Matthew Lillard is obviously Shaggy from all of the Scooby-Doo stuff. And they both are, like, pretty decent actors now. But during this, they both were terrible. I mean, there's parts with Freddie Prinze Jr. in this movie where he looks like Jake Lloyd from Star Wars in the cockpit. He's
and
just...
there's a character named Angel, too.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a line where he's like, "Are you an angel?"
I mean... Oh, does he actually say that? Did he say that?
He doesn't, but that would be great. But there is a character named Angel in the film.
Yeah, I knew that.
And, I mean, Phantom Menace comes out the same year as this movie.
Which, I do want to say one thing. Captain Panaka was in this movie, and he also played in Phantom Menace, so that's pretty active year for this guy.
I mean, yeah, he really did do a lot. Yeah, Wing Commander came out in March of 1999, and Star Wars Episode One came out in May of 1999. So, I mean, I guess Wing Commander got the jump on Star Wars in this way, like, but it, I mean, even... for the same year, Star Wars Episode One looks a lot better, holds up a lot better. I mean, boy.
Smoke more this, coherent, this, more memorable, yeah. At least.
This movie was very special for 1999 because it had the trailer for Star Wars Episode One in the beginning of the film.
Mm. Oh.
So a lot of people would just watch the trailer because we didn't have YouTube back then. They would just watch the trailer and then they'd leave.
Immediately leave. I would too.
That's how desperate we were for Star Wars. That may have been the reason why I saw this movie with my older brothers and my mom at the time. I think they just wanted to see the trailer for Episode One.
That would make sense. That's about all I would watch this movie for.
The budget was $30 million. It made 11. It did not do really well. It has a running time of 100 minutes. Let me tell you, it was about 85 minutes too long. I would have cut so many scenes if I was the editor of this movie. There are so many blank stares or just empty space in this film. And there's so much dark space, too. I don't understand why it's just so dark. I could barely see people half the time in some of these shots. And then in other shots, it was too bright. And I was like, "Joe, back off, everybody." Oh, it was terrible.
It was all over the place.
Freddie Prinze Jr., though, let's talk about his performance. Like, he was huge at the time. He was like you said, he was a heartthrob.
Yeah.
But he has just as much charisma as just like a bag of dog shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In this film, there's nothing to his character at all. His character has he pretty much has no flaws whatsoever. He's like the perfect pilot. He's like the best pilot in the galaxy or whatever. And there's nothing relatable to this character at all. There's nothing likable about him. He doesn't say anything funny.
Nope. He's really he is a problematic character just because of the first thing you said. He's pretty flawless as far as a character goes, which makes him very uninteresting. And I hate that type of hero. Like, maybe some people like the Superman type of hero, but he is just a Superman type of hero, but extremely boring.
Yeah. His only problem is that he's part pilgrim.
Yeah.
Which,
so he's a half-breed, as they call him in the film.
Which, can we talk...
What is a pilgrim?
But can we...
That's the funny thing about the pilgrim thing. When I was watching this, I'm like, oh, that must be something from the game. You know, they're probably trying to get all this lore from the game into this 100-minute movie. But the pilgrim thing was created for the film.
So...
Oh.
That's the thing. The backstory of this pilgrim-like thing is so much more friggin' interesting than the rest of this movie. It starts off and it's like, you know, this Frenchman, he's like examining this pilgrim stuff, and like, I'm thinking, oh, they're gonna go on like this like super like adventure out in the wilderness and like out in the space and try to figure things out. And then it just turns into like, oh, the pilgrims like hopped quasars and we're able to navigate everything. And I'm like, oh, okay, great. And you are part pilgrim, right? And my mom was a pilgrim, and my dad saved her. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's it. Like, and people hate pilgrims because, you know, we started war. Like, and that's it. That is literally it. And they tell a little bit about like the history of everything, but other than that, there's just nothing more to. And I wanted to understand what this pilgrim thing was, but instead it's just like told offhandedly through this Frenchman who like reveals secrets as I go along. It's just terrible.
He was the secret revealer throughout the entire, like, he was every single plot point.
He was like the exposition man. Mm-hmm. I actually have a nickname for him. I call him Ken Shamraiden because he looks like MMA fighter Ken Shamrock. And he sounds like Raiden from the Mortal Kombat movie.
Oh, so. Yeah.
Ken Shamraiden. The actor's name I couldn't pronounce.
I didn't
write it down. So that's what I'm going to call him for this.
Paul did a spot on interpretation of that guy. I was very, I liked that a lot, actually.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know him from other movies. He's a pretty good actor. But in this, they just piled on all the stuff that they couldn't possibly explain. And they had plenty of opportunities to explain that shit, specifically in the opening crawl of this frickin' movie, where the opening crawl of this movie is just a bunch of things from like JFK and other world leaders put to the backdrop of this like amber map thing. They could have just said in the year 2026, right? The pilgrims went out and like hopped on quasars. This is the story of, you know, the remnants of that. You could have got all the exposition done, but no, you had to like, we will go into space, the JFK stuff.
What were they trying to do? What was the point of this whole movie? Like, I kind of went in and out on this.
So the Kilrathi, the Cat Boglin people,
yeah,
they're searching for the Navcom. So they could invade Earth or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the Navcom is some kind of, they can pick up coordinates, but the pilgrims, they have the coordinates like built into their memory or something like that. That's what separates pilgrims from humans, if I'm getting that right.
Yeah. They had the ability to like navigate through quasars in a way that the AI through the Navcoms could as well. And so Freddie Prinze Jr. and Frenchman could like hop through quasars pretty well, whereas everybody else could not. That is my interpretation of this. And so the cat people got the Navcom and were able to plot a chart to get to Earth, to destroy Earth and wipe out all of the Terran Confederacy. And Matthew Lillard and Freddie Prinze Jr. and the rest of the, you know, Scooby gang were flying through space to prevent them. So
I feel like they stole from so many different like sci-fi stories and they just tried to build on it because they had the Confederacy, right? And that's like a StarCraft thing. And then you had the Pilgrims, which to me felt very Battlestar Galactica.
I was also gonna say this. It has a real touch of like the reimagined Battlestar Galactica. There's even like battle stations set condition one throughout the ship, and like they say stuff like that. And there's even scenes where Jürgen Prochnow, I think his name is standing there and like talking as if he's like looking in front of the Dreadus from Battlestar Galactica. So it feels, yeah. And there's a scene where the Admiral comes in and it looks like Saul Tai from Battlestar Galactica. And I'm thinking, this is like a Battlestar Galactica proto version, but it doesn't do any of it right. It does absolutely none of it right.
Exactly what I wrote too, was just it was that, but they didn't do anything right. Like they had the dogfights.
Yeah.
But the dogfights were actually pretty interesting, I thought, in Battlestar Galactica. Mm-hmm. Where in this, like, they were the most boring dogfights I have ever seen in my entire life.
It was nothing new. Like everything in this movie you've seen before, done better in another film.
Exactly. That's exactly it. It wasn't like,
yes.
It wasn't done. That's a great way to put it, Doug. It wasn't done with like reverence for anything else. It was just done like, oh, we're going to copy it and then move on. And they like half-ass copied it.
Yeah, I agree. Like they just did everything. Everything seemed half-assed, though maybe this was before a lot of those things, so maybe it was like really groundbreaking, but it just didn't feel like it had any substance to it. And that was my biggest problem with this entire sort of story, is it didn't have any substance. The other big problem I had with this story was, and maybe this is all sci-fi stuff, but I don't notice it as much in other sci-fi, and maybe they're better at hiding it, but to me they had a lot of overly technical terms that they'd liked to use in this entire film. At one of the points, they said heat corona. They saw you because of your heat corona. Like, why say that? Later on, they explain and they say, oh, they saw your, like, heat signature. They saw the heat coming off of you. Why did they have to say heat corona? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And then the captain at one point says, stop with this sterile conjecture. Like, what the hell does that even mean? Why overcomplicate these stupid freaking terms? And there was one moment where they just had a bunch of technical terms in like a row, and they never explain it. Like, if you watch Star Wars and they're like, oh, there's the Death Star, or it's a speeder or something like that, they at least are like pointing at the thing and you're like, okay, I know what that is. But with this, it was just like they would have a slew of just words that were completely made up and Whirlpool Charybdis pulled out of someone's asshole, and it just meant nothing. And to me, that's what a lot of the dialogue, it just hit me in the face and was like, I don't know what the fuck they're talking about. They're using all these terms that are never explained. And I'm supposed to get something out of it. Like, if you watch Battlestar Galactica, sure, they have their terms and stuff like that, but eventually it's explained somewhere, or you can kind of figure out what the fuck they were talking about.
Yeah.
But in this, it's like, what the fuck did that guy just say? Oh, he just said, run to the foggle, up to the, run up the stairs, don't trip on that thingamabow, or whatever. He freaking had no idea what he was talking about.
There's a scene. So a lot of the actors, they like read, they recite the script, like lines from the script, as if they have no idea what the hell they're even saying. Yeah. Like there's a scene with Freddie Prinze Jr. in the beginning, where he's just like, yeah, the hooba booba over there. At one time, this crew, it swallowed him up all whole.
Ulysses sailed between the whirlpool Charybdis and the island monster Scylla. She snatched six of his men and ate them.
Or there's a great scene where Frenchman and Freddie Prinze Jr. and Matthew Lillard are all going towards the Quasar, and Freddie Prinze Jr. says, have we reached the PNR yet? And I as soon as he said it, I was like, what the hell is a PNR? And I paused the movie and I was like, PNR is point of no return. That's what he meant. He couldn't say point of no return. He said PNR. Have they reached the PNR yet? I'm thinking, like, just friggin' say the three words, man. You just took me completely out of the film because you just had to acronym point of no return. What an idiot. Ugh.
Were they trying to appeal to, like, pilots or astronauts with this movie? Like, we want pilots and astronauts to watch this movie. We're going to throw all this jargon in there. They'll know what we're talking about.
I guess.
See, that's another movie that I feel like they were trying to spin off. Top Gun. Mm-hmm. Like, Top Gun definitely has those, like, little terms that they say. But you actually feel like you're hearing, like, pilot terms. This is just like, we're going to make up a different language for pilots and throw that in there at you and see if you can figure it out. And it just doesn't, it wasn't like fun, like Top Gun sort of made their language. It didn't feel real to me. And maybe that's what the problem was. Like they didn't actually paint a new language. It felt, maybe it was the actor's delivery. Like maybe it just felt so bored out of their mouth that it didn't feel like it was an actual real terminology that they were spouting.
The way the lines are delivered,
yeah,
it's like a fifth grader like reading Shakespeare. That's what these lines sound like.
Yeah,
like they don't know what the hell they're reading. They're just kind of reciting what's in front of them.
That's a good point.
And Matthew Lillard is just insufferable in this movie.
Todd Maniac Marshall, at your service, ma'am.
He's so over the top and whiny and a jerky the whole time, and it, like, I don't know, he's terrible. He is really, really irredeemable in this movie as an actor. None of the lines hit well. Everything seems just like, I don't know, teenage angst most of the time. Even when he gets like, when Rosie dies and he gets like downtrodden, he's sitting on the bed and in walks Angel, and you know, she tries her best to like cheer him up, but he was like, I'm not a good pilot, I'm not great at this. Like, he's just whiny. And then they're like, we need our best out there, and he's, that's not me, I'm not the best. Like, that's Jesus, Matthew Lillard, like, put some heart into it.
I'm a bad pilot. There's no plants. There's no toilet. I got these things on my hands.
He's just such
I completely agree.
He's terrible. Let's just talk about that Rosie scene real quick. Yes. Who in their right mind just decides to take a bulldozer and shove a ship off of the runway?
I wrote that same thing. What was the point? Like, that's why I was not, like in the least bit sad in that moment. Because it was just like, there was no reason to bulldozer away. Like, was it in the way? Was it like, oh, we need some walking space for everybody. We need this thing off. Like, it wasn't impeding anything.
The only person who wasn't landed.
We didn't even check it.
The only person who hadn't landed at the time was Angel. And she's like, move it off the ship. Get that piece of debris off my ship. Off the runway. And then they just take a bulldozer in what amounts to be the longest scene in the movie, where it just shows this bulldozer slowly pushing it off, and then it falls off as if there's gravity in space, just falls off the side. Yeah. And then there we go.
It would have been great if there was like a Roadrunner sound effect while it was falling.
There's supposed to be, there's like this sad, like kind of saddish music, and you know, Freddie Prinze Jr. is giving Matthew Lillard just like the best bro hug ever, holding him back, and then just this bulldozer for 15 seconds slowly pushes off this thing. I was laughing. It was supposed to be a sad scene, but I was like, this is the most comical thing.
Matthew Lillard gets like, he says something pretty racist in this movie towards Freddie Prinze Jr. He's like, you dirty pilgrim.
Yeah.
When he's trying to hold, it's like, dude, he's trying to help you. He's like holding you back. He's like, get off me, you dirty pilgrim.
Oh. So that's another weird thing to me. Why were they so racist against these pilgrims? I don't understand it. Like, there was seemingly no difference between them and pilgrims.
I think they were just jealous because they had like this this GPS in their head or whatever it was.
Yeah, and, you know, Frenchman says to, like, gives his exposition at one point saying, like, oh, the pilgrims betrayed the Terran Confederacy. But who knows how? I have no idea how. I don't know where they can betray them or in what manner. It would have been great to have an opening exposition talking about that, but no. And I let me just backtrack here. I don't know anything about the game, really. But from what Doug just said and from what I've read, pilgrims are not in any of these games beforehand. So I couldn't even reference the source materials in order to draw upon the movie.
Yeah, that is that's a sign of a bad sci-fi movie when they introduce this seemingly like interesting backstory, and then they don't have anything to really show for certain things. They have huge plot holes, like. Why are people so pissed off at the pilgrim? I guess that's not a plot hole, but it's just like something that would be necessary to understand. Is there a reason for people to hate the pilgrim so much? Apparently not. Like, they're just people who decided to go jump some quasars. Like, and they have, like you said, maybe they're pissed because they have a GPS in their brain, but who cares? Like, what? They betrayed someone, but we're not going to tell you what they did. Like, that's probably one of the more interesting things about what this movie could be.
Yeah.
And they don't even explain it. It's just very strange decisions made in this movie.
They talk about the pilgrims, like, in the beginning of the film, Ken Shanbraden is like, your father fought in the Pilgrim Wars. It kind of reminded me of Star Wars when they talk about the Clone Wars in A New Hope.
Yep. Yeah. I think that has to be intentional, right? It has to be like an intentional nod to like Star Wars in some way.
Yeah, and later on in the film, they say something like, they say, that's no destroyer.
Yeah.
That's no destroyer.
Very close to that's no moon.
Yeah, that's no moon. You know, like Star Wars, not to compare apples to oranges here, but Star Wars has technology that doesn't make a lot of sense, but you kind of have like a suspension of disbelief because all of the other like world building tropes kind of stand on their own with these like ridiculous things. So, for example, you know, Millennium Falcon can like drift through hyperspace and do all this stuff, and they can also like communicate rather quickly across galaxies, right? But in Wing Commander, none of the ships can move in light speed. However, they can transmit data and information and talk to each other at light speed, like pretty quick. And there's really no reference about it. Like, I have no idea how they are able to do that. So, for example, the bad guy from Tron, who is the good guy in this movie, relays the information to Freddie Prinze Jr. and French guy pretty instantaneously. Why couldn't they just also instantaneously tell Earth that these people were coming and just set up a thing? It feels like a giant plot hole.
I would agree there. I think that they were trying to be that was another problem I had with all this like technical talk that they had throughout the film, is that it made them sound like they were trying to be realistic, right? They were trying like to have this realistic tone, using quasars to jump through things. Like, if you're gonna try to be realistic, don't try to also suspend disbelief in a different way, like you were saying, like that doesn't make any sense. If you're gonna be realistic, do things that make sense. Otherwise, don't be realistic at all. Be a Star Wars where it doesn't have to make sense.
Yeah, but if you're gonna be realistic too, don't have a movie with fucking cat people.
Yeah exactly.
Yes. I guess I mean, they were trying to be realistic with a movie with cat people, but they also do not look threatening whatsoever. They look like hairless cats dressed up in like, I don't know. They look as threatening as those things from Fifth Element, right? Those like walking penguin
giant
people.
Thing.
Yeah. That's how threatening these things look. So I don't know. This also I don't know if you guys agree with me or not, but this movie has very little joy in it. I found absolutely
100% agree.
Double Dragon is a bad movie, but it celebrates itself in such a way. Right. There's like chemistry between characters. Everybody like really like loves each other, I think, in that movie, even though the script is terrible, they have a good time. Street Fighter is the same way. It's a terrible, I think, not a great script, but they play it up, they ham it up. There's some really great acting performances. Even Mortal Kombat Annihilation, it didn't take itself super seriously at times. Shao Kahn was like, I think, kind of funny in some of his scenes, and there's a lot of joy in that. There's no joy in this movie. Nobody's having fun. I don't find any of it light. It's terrible.
I'd say the only characters that show any kind of chemistry whatsoever is Maniac, or Lillard's character, Lillard's character, and Rosie.
Yeah,
because they start dating at some point. And the joke is that she's always horny and he's just so tired of having sex, man. Yeah, there's a lot of awful, like, gratuitous sex jokes in this.
Yeah.
You got boobs.
You should see them.
Mine are bigger.
Now, I've been told size doesn't matter.
She lied.
Like, who is this for? Is this a kids' movie? Are they trying to appeal to, like, teenage boys who get to laugh at all the penis jokes? Is it for teenage girls with Freddie Prinze Jr. being the heartthrob? Like,
yeah.
Who do they make this movie for? Yet the game is geared towards probably men between the ages of like 18 and 35. So let's get Freddie Prinze Jr. as the star and just throw in all these immature penis jokes. Like, what were they thinking?
Yeah, I agree. One of the biggest annoyances, which I think kind of plays to what you were saying about the language, is... what's her name? The captain?
Angel?
She wasn't a captain. Oh, was that her name? Angel? She was always calling people ladies. Like, she was always just saying, come on, ladies.
Yeah.
And I was just like, it annoyed the crap out of me. First of all, it doesn't make any sense because you're being like this chauvinist type of thing and you're... For one, a woman. So, okay, maybe if you were one woman with a just all male crew, then maybe I guess you could play it off that could be jokey or something like that. But it was a very co-ed crew.
It was a diverse crew. That's very one of the things. It felt like to me that they kind of nailed it in like the aesthetic casting choice. That was a very diverse future looking crew, right? There was a ton of people of color throughout the crew. There was a really like mixture of men and women there. I mean, I thought it was a pretty like diverse crew. But then Saffron Burroughs walks in as just like calling everybody ladies, pulling on all of these like gender stereotypes and like,
right.
Then has the most backwards kind of celebration of fighters' deaths, which is like the minute that they die, they're immediately forgotten, which is like, what the fuck? That's the...
It's like 1984 or something like that.
That's,
they tried to borrow from 1984.
That's the most backwards freaking thing in the world. Like, as soon as they die, no one remembers their name whatsoever. And
get out the bulldozer.
Yeah.
Oh. But no, I completely agree. Like that was she annoyed the crap out of me because of that. And not only her calling people ladies, like it's fine if it sort of like makes sense with the film, but that just didn't. And then when what's his name, Lillard, is in there and he's like, I'm going to do this like a man. I got balls. And he was like talking to Rosie when he was saying that. I was just like, do you really need to play like I'm the man sort of thing in this setting? It makes absolutely no sense with the entire movie and the entire, like you said, diversity of the movie. Is there a need to push like this male chauvinist thing?
Yeah.
No, not in this particular setting. And that to me almost felt more like Top Gun. like you bring it back to Top Gun. I feel like they stole a lot of that from Top Gun, and they're just like, and I don't even think Top Gun played it out that much.
Oh man, Top Gun.
This movie did.
Yeah, Top Gun is one of the most homoerotic movies I've ever seen in my entire life. That whole volleyball scene where they're just every one of them wants to have sex with one another throughout the whole volleyball scene. But the Top Gun was like in 1986. There have been 13 years before this movie was made. There's been so many jumps and like decent movies. For example, right? Not too many years before this, and we were just talking about it, Fifth Element came out, right? Fifth Element, if they were going to do, Fifth Element came out 2 years before this movie, and I think is leaps and bounds better than this movie, but it does a lot of the same things, right? It picks on, you know, old sci-fi tropes. It flips the, you know, Han Solo-y character into like be this kind of like doofish, but also like a hero. There's a ton of tropes that it plays on. Wing Commander picks up on all of those tropes and then does nothing with them. And it feels flat for that reason. It just like is filled with so much bounty and then just lets them all go away. There's nothing to contain it and nothing to like, no foil to go against it. It's really upsetting because you can see at times what they were trying to do. Right? With the kind of like moves that they were making. But none of it works. Joyless. A joyless movie.
Very joyless. One last thing about being joyless is I really miss these previous movies that we watched. Like you were saying before, all of those all of those movies were much more lighthearted, but they are also cheesy. Like, I miss the cheesiness of these video game movies. And I think that's something that a lot of video game movies need to kind of have, not to take themselves too seriously. And I feel like this one was like, let's turn the serious up to 11. And it was just, it was too serious. And, it upset me because I was excited to see a cheesy space movie, and almost every like sci-fi film of this era, and even like the 80s and stuff had a lot of cheesiness going on.
Yeah,
and this was just like, let's forget it and let's not even play to any of that and try to make almost like The Hunt for Red October, but in space. And no, don't do that.
The thing about this movie, like the previous movies that we reviewed, they all have their fan. Like they're not, none of them are great films, but they all have their fans.
Right.
There's people want to watch them and have fun. This movie, just looking on, this movie has no fans. Nobody likes this movie.
Yeah, I fully agree with you, Doug. There are so many things throughout the past couple of films that we've watched that, and I mean, I shit all over Mortal Kombat Annihilation. I probably will never watch that movie again, but if given a choice between Mortal Kombat Annihilation and this movie, Mortal Kombat Annihilation, 100 out of 100 times.
Paul, if I were to come to your house with a case of beer, with a DVD of Mortal Kombat Annihilation, you'd be like, pop that shit in and pop open those beers.
Yeah.
If I brought Wing Commander, you'd tell me to go the fuck home.
Yeah, just leave.
Break it in half.
Drive all the way back across the country. I'm done with you. I can't do it. Yeah. I mean, it's not a great movie. And there are so many decent actors in this movie, too. I know we say that in many of the films that we talk about, but I'm serious. Wing Commander has like a really group, like really great group of cast. David Warner is one of the best villains in film, I think. He was such a dick in Titanic. I still remember to this day how much of a dick he is in Titanic. He's really good in Tron. Both of those movies. And he's like this admiral and barely used throughout most of this. Freddie Prinze Jr. is a very good voice actor. He does a really good job. He's not a great on-screen actor in this at all. Matthew Lillard, same sort of way. Jürgen Prochnow, I think I said this right at the beginning, he's in Das Boot, he was in Dune, he was in The English Patient. He was a pretty great actor.
Is that Ken Shamraden?
Yes, that's Ken Shamraden is what you were calling. There's some really, really great actors in this, not to mention like the uncredited cameo of Mark Hamill. And Panaka is also in this too. So
can't forget Panaka.
I would never forget
Panaka. Grab some Panaka. Asshole mio.
One thing I also, another thing I want to mention is the story like twists. Did you get anything out of any of these story twists? Were you surprised by any of them?
What were the like, twists, one, man?
Well, one of the big twists was the French guy when he was inside, when he was flying his, flying whatever his ship was, a different kind of ship. And they were like, he's like, I'm the Commodore. And he's like, look me up. And they did like this Google search and they looked him up and they found, oh my God, he's the Commodore. He's a paladin. But I don't know what that means.
No, that was his call sign.
That was like his nickname. Yeah. The Paladin was like, you know how Maniac was Lillard's nickname? Yeah, his nickname was the Paladin.
Yeah.
Oh, so
and was he like going undercover as like a lower ranked guy? Is that what was going on there?
I have no idea what was. I thought he. I don't know what he was on the ship because they. I thought he was higher rank on the ship.
That's what I thought too. Because like, and like Lillard was like taking orders from him. He's like, I don't like this guy, man. Zoinks.
Yeah.
Oh, can we talk about his hair?
Oh, Matthew.
So when
Lillard,
did this movie take place? So the year this movie took place in 2654. So his hairstyle is about 650 years out of style. Oh,
definitely, 100%.
Looking like the fucking lead singer of Crazy Town with that haircut.
I think he looked like the lead singer Sum 41, pretty close to it. The twist that he was like some high-ranking official, I didn't care. It's
really, right. That's how I felt.
I mean, what are the implications of it one way or another, right? It like gives him credibility, but he already had credibility because he gave everybody the ring. Like he was like, we need some proof that you are who you say you are. He's like, oh, I've got this ring. And like gave this ring over to everybody. And they're like, oh yeah, he's the real fucking deal. And then later they're like, oh, here's another twist. I'm the leader. At that point, I'm like, who the fuck cares? Everybody already like liked you.
Right. He was already. That's what I thought, too. That's why this like had no effect on me was because they were already sort of taking orders from him anyway.
Yeah.
Like there were several moments where the captain was like, yeah, do what he said sort of thing. And I was just like, OK. And now you say that you're super high ranking. In this moment where, for some reason, Freddie Prinze Jr. was just like, I don't want to listen to you, man. You can't tell me what to do. No, wait, I'm the Commodore. Oh, whoa, hold the phone. We have to listen to this guy now. No, that's bullshit. You were listening to him the whole time, and I don't even know what his rank was before. I feel like his rank was like super captain before anyways. So
yeah, he was like a pilgrim hunter, like a pilgrim relic hunter. That's what I thought he was. I know that he was like the diligent. He was the captain of the diligent, like taking people back and forth and things like that. Okay, great. Woohoo. It just doesn't make any sense. And let's talk about the leadership of the group, the ship that he was on. Is it the Tiger Claw?
Yeah, Tiger
Claw. It's Tiger Claw in the movie, but it was Tiger's Claw in the game.
Okay. So
I don't know why they changed it.
So in the movie, in the Tiger Claw, it's the ship that they're on, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the big ship.
So they're on.
It's like the Enterprise of this
they're
movie.
They're on this ship. The leadership structure is just like the bald guy and the guy from Das Boot. And they, I don't really know their kind of relationship back and forth, but Ball Guy is in charge and Das Boot Guy is like second in command. They are out of their element, man, throughout this whole fucking movie. They have no idea what the hell they're doing. The French man comes on and like explains things and they're like, yeah, let's do it. Cool. Then they go on to the next thing. Like, we are out of our element. Okay, what do we do? And they turn to the French man. He's like, oh, do this. And then they go and do it. And then the bald guy dies in like 6 seconds because I had to rewind to check that he died.
And I don't even know how he died.
And then Das Boot is just like, I'm on board with everybody.
I thought the only person that died in this film was Rosie and whoever's name was on that ship.
No, the captain died too. There was a torpedo that hit and no one else got hurt, but he got like gouged in the head.
Yeah.
I must have
this giant, like, it looked like his entire brain exploded.
No, Doug, that's why I said it's like 6 seconds. And he was alive, and then all of a sudden they have like a scene where Das Boot Guy is holding him, and he's bleeding from the head, and then they...
Oh, I do remember that now,
And then they cut away, and then there's no talk about him, because for some reason on board this ship, when you die, you disappear, you don't exist. So nobody talks about him anymore after that point.
Yeah, they said take him to the medical wing, which really means get out the bulldozer. Yeah, exactly.
Foreshadowing for what happened with the movie in real life. No one talks about it.
One thing I want to say about the captain to finish off with him is that guy, every time they zoomed in on his face, they zoomed in on like everyone's pit face in an intense moment, and no one was like sweating. But you look at this guy, and it's like he must have been under some intense heat because there was just buckets of sweat coming out. Guy. And he's the captain. Like he's not composed or anything. He's literally sweating buckets compared to everyone else who's like all cool, calm, and collected. I was shocked by that. I don't know why. It made me laugh every time I saw him, and it just looked like there was more and more sweat just coming out of all of his pores.
He plays the captain dude plays Hercule Poirot in like the BBC show, Agatha Christie's, which is like a very famous show. The guy is knighted. He's like a big deal. And in this movie, they have no idea what to do with him and give him terrible lines. And he just, all leadership in this ship are out of their element. They have no idea what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, they're no one to look up to, that's for sure. They're no, like... Usually when you watch these sci-fi shows and there's a captain, you're like, he like feels strong. You got like Jean-Luc Picard, you got Adama. You have these guys who are like really strong captains. People look up to them. Yeah. Somewhat controversial at times, but you see this guy, he's not memorable at all. He has like no name. Nobody knows his name. And he's second in command to a guy who's French, who apparently is just like a pilgrim hunter, but he's actually the president of the United States. Who knows?
Yeah.
it's weird. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like you said before, they follow all these tropes, but they miss. This is one trope that they totally, totally missed on. Yeah. The captain is like a super important person in like most sci-fi stuff. This case, captain, not important. He dies to a pebble getting hit in his brain from a torpedo that no one else got hurt from.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's a terrible movie. In a series of us reviewing terrible movies, I am surprised that I can say this, but like, this is the bottom of the barrel.
I don't think it can get worse, to be honest.
Is it worse than Annihilation?
Yes.
Yes. When we rank these films, is this the worst one we've done?
Yes.
So far.
I believe.
I totally agree.
I think it's by far.
Far.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is not I mean, maybe someone will disagree, and I bet if you look on like IMDb, Annihilation has a shittier score.
I think even Double Dragon has a shittier score.
Probably.
But
there's no burping music in this one.
And I would have loved it if there was. But but in this case, like, there is not one redeemable scene that I saw where I was any bit excited for the movie. I didn't laugh at all. There's no funniness, like Paul said, no joy, and all the intense moments totally sucked away from very poor acting. So yeah.
It's like they try to make Lillard the comic relief of the movie, and even with like him and Rosie with their balls jokes and their there was a joke about his penis, like, yeah. Oh, size doesn't matter. But she's like, oh, she was definitely lying to you.
Yeah.
You got boobs.
You should see them.
Mine are bigger.
Now I've been told size doesn't matter.
She lied.
Small penis joke. That's funny. It's the 90s. Austin Powers is popular. That's going to be in theaters in a few months.
Yeah. They even do the scene where... like they time hop and like time stops and they do the Matrix like scene, and a few months later, boom, here's the Matrix and does it 100% better and has better storyline and is much more unique and is much more progressive in terms of sci-fi and overshadows this altogether.
Was this I think this was the first film to use that effect?
I don't know if it was the first film, but it definitely happened far, like a couple months before The Matrix.
And that was another attempt at another, like a funny thing that they were trying to do with Rosie and Lillard. They jumped up and they froze in time and then fell over. And that was supposed to be funny, I think, but it was not funny.
No.
There's a line from Lillard, and I don't know why he delivers it this way, but when him and Rosie, when they're showing off with the when they're like flipping their planes or their ships around, for some reason, he's talking to Rosie. He goes, "My name's Todd Maniac Marshall, at your service, ma'am."
You're a total maniac.
Todd Maniac Marshall. At your service, ma'am.
Like, he does like this butthead laugh. God. Like, why the hell does he talk like that?
I think it was a forced joke. It was just supposed to be super funny to somebody. Maybe the director was laughing. He's like, that's awesome.
Maybe a Kilrathi will find it funny.
Maybe.
An alien. Anyone who's not from Earth.
It doesn't make any... The choices Matthew Lillard made throughout this movie are just baffling to me. For instance, when Frenchman yells at him at the beginning of the movie where he's like, oh, not bad for like you, the second best pilot, and Frenchman's like, you shut your mouth. And Matthew Lillard like looks back, looks at everybody, like doesn't break the fourth wall, but like almost does. And it's like, kind of scared and like stands forward, and then when the Frenchman leaves and Matthew Lillard is just sitting there and he's like, I don't like that guy, or like, that guy is too serious, or whatever he says, none of that works. Absolutely none of it works. I don't feel any sympathy. I don't laugh. I have no connection with it. It's either poor directing or poor acting, or probably a combination of both. But
yeah,
and I feel right now, in this moment, I feel real bad for picking on anybody in Mortal Kombat Annihilation, except for Kitana's mom. Other than that,
I feel bad about what I said about her in the last episode, about her being desperate for work, for her being a bad actress. She was in Mortal Kombat. Maybe I should watch other films with her. I kind of felt bad.
I don't know. I don't know, man. Potato quality of acting. Like, that's the top notch there. Matthew Lillard is like, could learn a thing or two. I'm 100% serious. From this movie, he could learn a thing or two from her.
You know, he has a call. His character has a call sign that's, it's better than sex.
Lieutenant Marshall. He has a new call sign.
See. Well, I hope it felt very good.
Better than sex.
Bullshit. Better than sex with myself.
Do you remember that line from Rosie?
Yes.
When Rosie and Angel are having, they're having girl talk.
Yeah.
And she says, Maniac has a call sign. It's better than sex. Better than sex with myself. So, masturbation jokes, too.
Oh, my God.
They want to appeal to an older teen audience with this movie.
So bad.
It's just terrible.
That line hurt. That caused me physical pain.
Yeah, it was bad. I remember that line. It was really bad.
And there was another one where... This was written by like a seventh grader when Shaggy is on or Lillard's in his ship and he says, ease it in, girl, ease it in. Yeah. And then Rosie says, like, that was enough. But she has to explain to the audience that that was a sex joke. So she says, I love it when you talk dirty to me.
Almost there. Easy. Just ease it in, girl.
I love it when you talk dirty.
Oh. Yeah, and it was right before she died.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Right before she exploded and she's about to die. He's
right before she's bulldozed. Just like right before the bulldoze. Oh.
That bulldozer scene, like the CGI reminded me of like a cutscene from Rise of the Robots.
It's terrible. It's terrible, Doug.
It was so bad.
The feminization of the ships and stuff in this movie too. I know they do it in a lot of other sci-fi, and that's a trope too. And they do it a lot in Star Wars, right? Han Solo refers to the Falcon as like old girl, and like you gotta hang in there, old girl. You know, all this different kind of stuff. But the way in which they do it here is like, God in heaven, they really want to fuck their ships. It really sounds like Freddie Prinze Jr. and Matthew Lillard are going to have sex with their ships. It's like, oh yeah, this girl, she's hot, flying, like, what the fuck, man?
If that were the case, Freddie Prinze Jr. would be having sex with Mark Hamill.
Oh, yeah.
Because
Mark Hamill
does the voice of the ship.
What a shitty cameo, Mark Hamill.
There's also a cameo. So this is directed by Chris Roberts. He's the director of this film, and he also is the creator of the Wing Commander video games. And he's one of the pilots, I think, who goes in and save and helps Freddie Prinze Jr. at the end. But I didn't recognize him. Did you guys recognize him?
Absolutely not.
I tried to barely recognize anyone in this movie.
It's another creator cameo, right? Ed Boon in the last two Mortal Kombat movies.
Oh yeah.
And now,
get down here.
Suckers.
Another thing that didn't make sense to me in this movie was those masks that they wear in the, did they ever wear them? Like, they would put them on for literally a millisecond and then pull them off to talk. Every scene, like, it would show someone's face, they'd pull off the mask, like, I'm going to say something real quick. Does it mean the mask does nothing?
And then there was this like dangling freaking thing from the side of their face that looked ridiculous.
It did, yes. Like, and they didn't need the masks because the French guy, when he was in his plane, guess what? Nothing.
No mask.
He had...
I know my rights.
Oh, God. But yeah, I didn't understand that at all, and that just annoyed me because, like you said, it was just distracting. It was just like hanging there on the side. There's no need for it if you're never gonna wear the dang thing.
No.
Oh, so the Kilrathi, they appear. I checked the timer, 1 hour and 13 minutes into the film.
Yeah, I noticed that.
It's like you're watching this movie for like an hour, and you're like, what the hell are these things? Like, there's aliens in this movie?
Yeah.
I guess so.
I mean, they're the ones who like break in at the beginning to try to steal the navcom.
But you don't see them.
But you don't see them. I mean, you see them.
They could very well be humans. Like the Kilrathi could just be like, you know, they could look like a Genghis Khan or something.
Yeah,
like
I thought they were humans. But I thought they were another race, sort of like the Pilgrims.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
I'm trying to think of like positive things about this movie. And I would say There are some real attempts here to like play homage to really good sci-fi works. So there's a lot of like Larry Niven here that is referenced. Obvious Ender's Game kind of references here too, in like the command school and all of these different situations. Star Wars, Starship Troopers a little bit is referenced here too. But, you know, like we said multiple times, nothing really done well, but it is a real like love letter to those sci-fi movies and books and comics of the past. And in that way, I guess, you know, that's something that you can write about. That's a positive here.
What?
I mean, I'm trying to grasp the love letter. But...
what is it? Roses are red, violets are blue. Fuck you. That's what the love letter was here.
I mean, yeah, all of those, you know, stories and books and movies that I'm talking about had like a real political ramifications, right? They're in dialogue with things. Less so Star Wars, but everybody else that I mentioned was an actual dialogue with something. What the hell is this movie trying to say? I have no idea what it's trying to say. What's the message behind it? I have no idea. And this is the one of the first movies that breaks the cycle of human modification. There is no human modification in this movie at all.
Well, you're right.
That's true. Unless you count the GPS in his brain.
I guess maybe. Maybe you'll talk Freddie Prinze Jr. is just modified to begin with, but most of the other movies have some sort of modification of the body.
If only that GPS could navigate him to an acting school.
Oh, man, Doug. I don't know. I don't think there's a school big enough in space to really help Freddie Prinze Jr. and Matthew Lillard here.
No, not at all.
Let's give it up for the French guy, though. He was great. I enjoyed most of the scenes that he was in.
He was my favorite, and it was mostly because of his French accent. Otherwise, yeah. If he had a regular American accent, I think I would have hated him. But because of his accent, and because of your portrayal of his French accent, that made me like him a little bit more.
Welcome to Wing Commander. Yeah, see.
I think aside from the like awful sex talk and balls jokes, I thought Rosie was a pretty fun character. I thought she was interesting. She was fun. Her and Lillard had a little bit of decent chemistry.
Yeah.
The only chemistry in the entire movie.
Yep.
The only two characters who had really any kind of personality and who both had frosted hair.
Yep. I agree with that. They are also the only two characters, I think, aside from like Freddie Prinze Jr. and the rest of the cast, to like share a scene outside Freddie Prinze Jr. It like breaks the narrative arc a little bit. That was interesting too. They did a lot to try to like create some sort of audience participation and connection with the two of them. And that worked for her. I didn't care about Matthew Lillard at all because up to that point in the movie, he is just unredeemable. So
at the end of the movie, so when Angel, so her ship, she's about to die, and she's like, she tells Freddie Prinze Jr., she's like, go on without me. And I just, so the scene with Lillard and Rosie, I felt a little bit of emotion, but with Freddie Prinze Jr. and Angel, there was like nothing. I'm like, are these characters an item? Because they kiss at the end.
Yeah,
I'm like, are they like, when did they start dating?
Are they supposed to like each other?
He flies to her and she's like in her pod. And then she says like, go out, go and finish the mission. You know you have to. And then his response to it is just to shove his hand up against the window as he's leaving. That's it. That's all he does is just like shove his hand there and then turn his ship around and go. It's the silliest fucking scene.
But like those characters have no chemistry whatsoever.
Absolutely like, nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, I would have never guessed that they were in love in any way, shape, or form. They didn't do any sort of chemistry at all earlier in the movie to lead up to anything.
I
You know what would have made this movie better? if they would have used the original cast from Wing Commander 3 and 4.
Oh, yeah.
So we know that Mark Hamill played Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character.
Right.
And then we had Tom Wilson, who was Biff from Back to the Future. He played Matthew Lillard's Maniac character.
Oh, okay.
That would have been great.
That would have been cool.
Tom Wilson's a very good actor. He's really good in Back to the Future. That's really all I know him from. But
he's great in that, though.
Yeah,
you've been great.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know what, I think he just retired from acting. It's a shame.
I really like him. I think that's probably the reason. Or he read the script of this and said, this sucks. And then and Mark Hamill read the script and he's like, yeah, I'll just play a voice. Was there anybody? Oh no, there was John Rhys Davies.
Yeah, John Rhys Davies. He played the French guy's character.
Oh, okay.
And then the David Warner's the Tolwyn character in this movie in the game was played by Malcolm McDowell.
Yes. Yep.
Who was a very He's like your quintessential villain character in movies. Like he was in Clockwork Orange. He was the villain in the movie Tank Girl.
Yep.
Which I think is I enjoy that movie. A lot of people do not. I enjoy that movie.
Malcolm McDowell is a pretty good actor.
I do like him. Yeah. I do like that guy. He does play a very good.
He was also the villain. I think he was in the show Heroes. One of the main villains in that show.
I did not know he was the same guy in Clockwork Orange. He's just so much younger in that.
I don't know. The scene in which Freddie Prinze Jr. is on board the same ship as the Master Control Program guy from Tron. When he's on the ship and Master Control guy from Tron says to him, "You looks like you're on the wrong ship." And then Freddie Prinze Jr. is like, "Oh yeah." And then like prances off of the ship. That is the embodiment of the badness of this movie, I think, in which a really good actor talking with a really bad actor makes the really good actor look bad. It was just terrible.
Why would they even choose to have that scene? What was the point of that particular scene?
Exactly. How does that help anything? And Doug, you usually talk a little bit about music in most of these. The music for this movie was forgettable too.
Was there music?
It was just, you know, your generic action orchestra score.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of Avengers, just forgettable. a lot of horns and stuff.
Yeah. There was no memorable music at all that I can think of throughout this movie. So yeah, I think you're right. It's just the normal action movie bull crap.
Yeah.
I miss the techno from the Mortal Kombat films.
Can you imagine? I think I would.
That would have made this movie a little bit better.
I was going to say, I think I would have liked this movie a little bit more if they had like some Mortal Kombat techno in it.
You know, I really wish they had the Mario soundtrack on this.
The elevator scene music.
Oh no, Rosie's dead. Rosie's dead.
No, when the bulldozer comes out. Perfect. But yeah. At least
do we have brighter horizons in the future? What's the next movie?
Yeah, what is the next movie?
So the next one's a big one.
A big one.
But so technically it came out in 1998 in Japan, but it came out in the United States in 1999.
Is this Final Fantasy?
But it would be Pokemon, the first movie.
Pokemon.
Oh, all right.
Oh, I'm excited. I didn't know we were going to do that movie.
Yeah. It wasn't on the list we were looking at because it's an animated one. So I had to check Japanese animated films. So there's actually three Pokemon movies that were released in theaters, and then the next animated film is Final Fantasy Spirit Within in 2001. That's going to be after Tomb Raider, I believe.
Okay, so we're going to do,
which is live action.
So we're going to do Pokemon the first movie, and then
Yes,
I think Pokemon the movie 2000, right?
Yeah, I believe. Okay, so that came out in. So that's. Wait, did that?
No, there's got to be another.
For some reason, I don't think that came out. I think that came out later than 2000, even though it has 2000 in the title. I could be wrong.
I'm actually kind of excited for Pokemon, the first movie. I haven't seen the other ones, but I own that one, and I remember being so excited getting that movie for Christmas. I think it came with a card or something, holographic Charizard, even though it was worth nothing because it wasn't the real holographic Charizard, but it still was
cool. I think it was a Mewtwo card.
Oh, you know what? It wasn't. It was either Mew or Mewtwo. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. That would make a lot more sense if it was Mewtwo.
And so I remember one of the ones I saw in the theaters, it was the second one. I remember getting an ancient Mew card. And I thought it was worth like $300, and it was not.
50 cents, man. It was worth nothing. Yeah.
I had this like card book. It had like all these cards and their prices. And it was like ancient Mew. This is going to be such a rare card. I have to see this movie. And I went to see the movie. And I'm like, this thing's like gold. And then I found out it's worth nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. Very sad. The third movie had like an Enti card. One of the three legendary cats from the second game, Enti, Suicide, and Ryakoza or something like Riku or something like that. But you got an Enti card. And I think all three of these movies happen right around the same time. Pokemon the movie, the first movie was in 1999 in November. Pokemon the movie 2000 was July of 2000. And then Pokemon 3, the movie, came out in April of 2001.
We actually skipped Pokemon the first movie then because it came out in 98.
In Japan.
That was in Japan.
Oh, in Japan.
We're doing American release. We're doing American releases here.
What?
Wait, so does that mean that the second... So 2000 came out... So that's when... So the second Pokemon came out before Tomb Raider then?
Right.
Yes.
So we're going to have...
Okay, so that's going to be... Pokemon, so we're going to be doing two Pokemon back-to-back then.
I think we might actually be doing three Pokemon back to back.
What? Oh, because Pokemon 3, the movie. Holy crap.
Yeah.
That's a lot of Pokemon in a row.
So maybe we'll do all three as one big show, or maybe we'll break them up into three. Who knows? As they say in the Pokemon television show, who's that Pokemon? Who is that Pokemon movie? Is it the first, second, third, or all three?
Do we want to do all of them? There are so many Pokemon movies.
Oh, and are we going to do Pikachu's Vacation?
No way.
We're only going to do the ones that are definitely have a American theatrical release. And I think there's only... I think there's three movies that had an American theatrical release.
We should probably just do the first movie. That was the memorable one. But we can do the other two. I don't remember.
Yeah.
2000.
Who knows? We might have a justification in the next episode talking about whether or not we're doing 14 Pokemon movies in a row or whether or not we're going
to
just do one.
We might have to have a spinoff podcast for just Pokemon movies.
I'm ready.
Cool. Do you guys have anything else about this wonderful Wing Commander movie, though?
No, it sucks.
I have...
Sucked in 1999, it sucks now.
We are not sorry for spoiling anything. You didn't want to watch this movie anyways. This hour and 20 minute podcast was well worth whatever time you would have wasted watching the actual Wing Commander movie. It probably was way more exciting. So just watch a trailer or something and maybe you'll understand how shitty that movie actually is. I can't even imagine what the trailer looks like. I can't imagine any moment in that movie being exciting.
I think the big selling point of the movie was The Matrix. I think that was in the trailer.
The Matrix.
And there was also, I was watching the movie and there was a scene with Freddie Prinze Jr. He's like, I love this baby. And once I heard that, I'm like, that was in the trailers. That was like the line you heard in every TV commercial.
Definitely.
Was, I love this baby.
Yep.
I was hoping that the trailer was just going to have Star Wars Episode 1 trailer in it. Most people wouldn't saw it for that.
See the trailer for Episode 1, then leave the theater.
Yeah.
That's what the trailer guy says.
That would be hilarious. But
what didn't? Speaking of which, didn't Meet Joe Black also have the trailer for episode one in it?
Yeah, and that's the movie that was infamous for, like, people went to see it and then they'd leave the theater before the movie would actually start.
Yeah,
I loved so that it
was
movie.
That was like the big story back then about Meet Joe Black. That's all I know about Meet Joe Black is that nobody saw the movie; they just wanted to see the Star Wars trailer.
Yeah, yeah, one of the few films showing the first Star Wars Episode One trailer.
I've never seen Meet Joe Black, but I know. Don't you love the movie, Paul? Meet Joe Black.
I like Meet Joe Black a lot. I think it deserves a recut. Topher Grace, if you're listening, re-edit Meet Joe Black to be a little bit shorter, just like you did the Star Wars films. Meet Joe Black is a good movie.
I've heard good things. I gotta watch that movie.
It's based on a film from 1934 called Death Takes a Holiday. Also a very good film.
It's based on a film that was done 5 years before it.
1934.
Oh, I thought you said 94.
No.
No.
Much longer.
Okay. Cool.
You guys. Anyway, thanks for watching our review of Meet Joe Black.
You guys got anything else?
Nope. That does it for this episode of Reset and Rewind, Wing Commander from 1999. You can follow us on Facebook or email us at resetandrewindpodcast@gmail.com. And kind of like the intro, usually I go off with, like, you know, a reference or quote from a movie, but for this one I have nothing. So maybe we'll just play Matthew Lillard doing that stupid laugh of his.
Just easy thing, girl.
I've been told size doesn't matter.